The OC podcast is proudly brought to you by beer52.com. And as a listener to the show, we would like to reward you with a free case of craft beer. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 delivery. Head on over to beer52.com/MFC and order your free case today. Beer52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and order your case.
Beer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. Here's McHugh. Oh, what a goal! A cup classic from Carl McHugh, who might just have sent Motherwell into the semis.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself and Jay are joined by Joe McKelvey to look back at Motherwell's sixth win in a row, a 2-1 victory over Hearts. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, I said before we came on, we're getting a bit used to this and unfortunately we're running out of things to talk about because it's a bit boring discussing victories every week. But what a fantastic victory today. Won it right at the death. David Turnbull's fortuitous free kick, shall we say, sneaking past Colin Doyle, who has taken over the mantle of Cammy Bell with an absolutely extraordinary goalkeeping error and one that was extraordinary and wonderful in equal measures, it must be said for us. Jake Hastie had put us ahead. Stephen Naismith levelled the game before half-time. But it would be Motherwell that went on to win it, Jay, and six wins in a row. We didn't see this coming after the Scottish Cup exit. We thought the season was going to whittled down to nothing. Now we're 2 points off the top six. The young players are absolutely flying. This is some time to be a Motherwell supporter.
Yeah, that's it. I think what we've, you know, when we've spoke about the last few games, we have been a little careful not to get carried away. We've obviously mentioned the fact that, you know, that run of five wins was against, you know, three teams who are below us, a Livingston side who are on a little bit of free fall, and a really poor Hibs team on the night. So this seemed like the first proper test, if you like, not to kind of be negative about that run or put it down, but this was a big test for us. You know, Hearts, I don't think Hearts were particularly poor or anything like that. They went about their business. They're a big, strong side. It's all about physicality. I mentioned last week about how, for me, for a number of years now, Hearts have been the kind of the kings of the dark arts, and I thought that was in show again. You know, lots of little niggles, lots of hitting the deck easily. The shirt pull and all that kind of stuff. And we stood up to it really, really well. I thought at times we maybe struggled a little bit with the one or two of the Hearts players in terms of their size and how to deal with that. But we came through with it really, really well. I thought, you know, prior to the free kick, I would have been, you know, content with a draw. You know, a point against that Hearts side would probably have been the correct result, if you like, I think, you know, based on the way the game had went up to that point. But to get the win, regardless in the way it was done, it's just phenomenal. I mean, six wins out of six is, you know, ridiculous. And we can now go to Celtic Park next week with, you know, actual hope and a bit of confidence and a bit of momentum. It's not a place you go and expect to win by any means. But, you know, I think we can go there with a lot more optimism than perhaps we would have, you know, prior to Hogmanay when you were going to places like that and possibly fearing that you were going to get, you know, five or six goals taken off you. So it's just, you're right, it's a joy to be a Motherwell fan at the moment. It's exciting. It's, you know, you're going, you're being entertained, you're watching Hastie, Turnbull, Campbell, you know, Aribe, these guys actually putting on a show and putting on, you know, some entertainment. And imagine if we went back and listened to some of the podcasts that we were doing, you know, between the summer and Christmas, that was what we were crying out for. You know, it wasn't as though, you know, we were making a big deal about nothing. I think we were, you know, pinpointing specifically the way we were playing, the way we were approaching games, the fact that we didn't have width, the fact that we were too stubborn with the 3-5-2, we were too busy trying to be this big side rather than trying to, you know, play more footballers in inverted commas. And we're now reaping the benefits of what happens when you do that. So, you know, as I said last week, I'm not sure whether it was a final throw of the dice from Robinson. I don't know whether he was pressurised into these changes or whether it was a plan all along. But that's, you know, by the by, that doesn't matter. What matters at the moment is the fact that we're an exciting side to watch. People are starting to take notice of it. I listened on the way home for the game today to about half an hour on you know, Sports Sound of them discussing just the young players at Motherwell. I mean, when was the last time MD spent half an hour on the national radio station talking about Motherwell in any form? You know, we're actually capturing a bit of the imagination at the moment. We've got some really exciting young players. And you're right, regardless of what we actually achieve between now and the summer in terms of league position, it doesn't really matter at the moment. It's enjoyable being a Motherwell fan. It's something to be proud of. And, you know, I think everybody counts down the days to the next time they get to go see this side.
Joe, the circumstances were certainly fortuitous in the way we won the game. But it shows a real character to go right to the death as well, doesn't it? And win the game in more difficult circumstances, a game that was certainly right in the balance right up until the final kick of the ball.
Absolutely. I think it was Curtis Main said in his post-match interview that earlier in the season, those were the kind of things that we maybe felt that luck wasn't on our side at any point with any sort of decision. So you need to kind of, you need to take it when it comes your way. Personally, like Jay had said to Marty just about a minute before the free kick red card incident, that I would be very happy with a one each draw, because obviously Hearts are a top six side. Remember, they were top of the league for a good while earlier in the season. And as much as we would love it to be the case, we can't win forever. So I was saying if we end up 5 wins and a draw against Hearts, then that's a great run of 6 games. But no, it was delighted to see the ball go in the back of the net. Obviously, I wasn't great from the Hearts goalie by any stretch of the imagination. I actually felt a little bit sorry for him, but that's the way it goes. It's we signed Ross McCormick in January thinking that can he get us out of this rut? And we've got ourselves out of rut, and we barely even need him. The way we're set up and the football we're playing is just a joy to watch at the minute.
Jay, I'm quite concerned. I think that Jake Hastie might need to take a week off, because he's now demonstrated what we've been seeing for weeks in front of a nationwide television audience as well. Another spectacular goal. The rumours on Twitter flying that Gareth Bale actually has a Jake Hastie tattoo. But it was very Gareth Bale-esque in its execution, wasn't it? A drive and run, he cuts inside. And what a finish as well.
Aye, I mean, I've not seen it back yet. I'm, you know, obviously just going in the benefit of the, you know, what happened live. So I'm excited to actually see the goal back. But it's what he's capable of. You know, obviously we know that, having seen his goal at St Mirren. It's something he is capable of cutting in from that side. And it's, you know, another weapon to have, because we've went so much of this season with your wingers or your wing backs starting so far, you know, far back, that it's, you know, a completely different game that they're playing. When you've got an out and out winger who can pick the ball up just inside the opposition half and who has the remit to really go at them. And when it's somebody with the talent of Hastie who can do that, you know, that's a nightmare for fullbacks, because you just don't know which side there's going to go. You know, there's none of that show him on his left, show him on his right, because Hastie can either go down the right or the left, depending on which side he's on, and put a ball into the box, or he can cut inside and have a dig. And it's such a, you know, a vital, vital weapon to have. And particularly when, again, you know, I thought Curtis Main today did really, really well up top. You know, as I said earlier, Hearts, big physical side. And, you know, when you've got somebody like Berra all over you for 90 minutes, it's difficult. And I thought Curtis Main did really, really well, but he isn't scoring goals. So when you have somebody like Jake Hastie, who is popping up with goal after goal at the moment, you know, that's a massive, massive part of what we've done over the last 6 games. And long may it continue, because that's the kind of thing that, you know, we've said for so long, you know, the idea that we didn't have really MD in the team, other than maybe Turnbull, who, even if things aren't going your way, or, you know, there's just, your strikers aren't scoring, you need somebody who just has that little bit of invention, that little bit of creativity that can just, you know, create a goal out of nothing. And we now actually have a couple of players like that on the park, including Jake Hastie. So as I said earlier, when you go to somewhere like Celtic Park now, you know, if you go and you ride your luck a little bit and Celtic aren't on form, you now have guys like Hastie on the park who can pick up the ball and can make something happen. So it's just, I'm still in a little bit of shock at just how wild the turnaround has been. It's really, really something. It's not as though, you know, you get sides who you know, have poor spells of form and then turn it on and things like that. But I can't remember the last time I've seen such a turnaround. It's one thing to be, you know, shit one season and then you have an entire summer to put things right, but it's absolute night and day. It's incredible. And yeah, it's just, it's fantastic. And hopefully Jake Hasty gets his signature on a new deal as quickly as possible.
So the youngsters are going to grab the headlines, aren't they? Turnbull man of the match, Jake Hasty, I think was a young player of the match as well. It's, but every week we're getting levels of consistency from them, which is quite unlike young players. There normally is spells where they'll be very, very good and then they'll, their levels will drop off. But in the case of Hasty in particular, his levels have been really high from the minute he got his opportunity in the first team.
Absolutely, yeah. He's really transformed the side. You say the youngsters have been great, and they absolutely have been, the three of them since we moved to the 4-2-3-1 formation. Turnbull, Campbell and Hasty have all been fantastic, but a guy who I was very critical of us signing, maybe only 2 months ago, has made a big impact as well. I think again today, Alex Rodriguez Gorin was fantastic in the middle of the park, and he certainly added something into the team a bit deeper, which allows us to play football. There was one point today where a ball was coming in the air to Gorin, and I was thinking to myself, if that was, with no disrespect to these players, if it was a Carroll McHugh or a Andy Rose, they would have hit the ball first time. Rodriguez took a step back, pulled it down and played a pass, and I'm thinking, if that's how we're taking balls out of the air now, it's making us such a better football team to watch. I hadn't been to a few games for a while just before Christmas. Then I made the St Mirren game and the Kilmarnock game, and I genuinely did not enjoy 1 minute of either game. And to think I could go from how my experience of those games less than 2 months ago to how I'm feeling about watching us just now, I'm very fortunate to have made something like 6 out of the last 8 games or something. It's been absolutely fantastic. Long may it continue.
And Jay, you talked about your reaction to that winning goal. Can you talk us through it a wee bit more?
No, I just pissed myself laughing while celebrating. I can't think of any goal. You know, obviously we all know what scenes are like when you score an injury time winner. But I've never celebrated it while also pissing myself laughing.
What about Ross McCormack? We talked about him, we touched on him earlier on. He now appears to be injured and wasn't in the 18 today. It's not really worked out, and we're kind of halfway through the loan spell already, aren't we? Do you see Ross McCormack getting a chance to feature at this current time? Because even if Ross McCormack was to come into training tomorrow fully fit and raring to go, Ross McCormack shouldn't get into our side.
I genuinely think that we've not missed a player like him, if that makes sense. I don't think you could say that the signing's not worked out purely for the fact that we've not needed it to work out. He obviously played 45 minutes against Ross County, and it was largely disappointing because he was very unfit. But since then, we've obviously won 6 games, won 5 since that Ross County game, where we've been where we've had the same starting 11 for all 5 games. And there comes to a point where if you are thinking now, Ross McCormack, if we're trying to justify his signing, we would need to put him in the team. But the he doesn't deserve to be in the team, and he's going to really have to knock someone out of the team in order to make that impact. But it's just, to be honest, it's actually quite refreshing that we've not needed him to make the impact. And I think if he does get some sort of fitness, it'll be some luxury sub to have on. Not only that, you've obviously now got Chris Cadden back in training, and we don't know how far away Craig Tanner is as well. So as much as these 11 players that have played five games in a row and won them have been brilliant, we're looking at a point where we might actually be in a place where we can make positive changes from the bench every week. If you've got the likes of Cadden, Freer, McCormick, Young James Scott all able to come on in attacking positions. And then if you think this first half of last season, if we'd said, oh, McHugh and Hartley both aren't in the team, we would have probably laughed. But both of them are, as much as there's an element of people of different opinions and how the two of them have performed this season, to have basically your last season's captain and this season's captain sitting unable to get in your team speaks volumes for the guys that are in the team.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we brought on Elliot Freer, James Scott and Carol McHugh today. That's three very strong substitutes, isn't it? A great strength and depth, which is quite incredible considering we didn't do a great deal of business during the transfer window there. We just seem to have made subtle changes to the style of play, subtle changes to our personnel, and we've also been boosted by the fact, Joe, that we've now had five games where we've been able to name an unchanged starting 11, because that's massive as well. When you're chopping and changing, perhaps reacting to defeats a bit excessively, then that does unsettle the rhythm, and ultimately you get disjointed performances too.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think this year we've had back fours, we've had back threes, and if you think of all the players that have played in defence over the course of the season, you've had Hartley in there, there's been Liam Donnelly at times, even Barry Maguire, who's now out on loan, and Mbulu, Adam Livingston, who are all not on the side just now. I think a big, massive part of that is, I mean, in the last six games, we conceded, what, just three goals as well, I think. One to Aki's, one today, and I think there was another one in there somewhere, St Mirren. Anyway, I think having a settled back four has really done us massive favours in regards of building a base to let our new style of play go. I think, sorry, you've got Aldred in the centre, who's a sort of massive bat on Rami, a centre-half, and then beside him is very well complemented by Dunn, who's absolutely rapid. And then we've had a lot of different options at fullback this year, and a lot of different people have played there at times, but I think Liam Grimshaw has been absolutely fantastic since he came into the team. And I know some people don't like a right-footer playing in the left side, but for me, Tate continues to be an incredibly consistent player for Motherwell wherever he's played.
And Jay is very much adapted to the role of captain as well, Richard Tate.
Yeah. I think it's so bizarre. We almost have kind of passed the parcel with the captaincy a little bit over, obviously, the last couple of years with, McHugh. Obviously, we don't know the exact ins and outs over whether, you know, how that conversation came about. But McHugh steps aside, Hartley takes over, but now Hartley can't get in the team. I mean, Richard Tate, I think, you know, fantastic on that left-hand side. I think he's maybe wasted a little bit when he's been played at wing-back on the left, but I think as a left-back, he does the job magnificently well. Grimshaw, obviously, on the right, had another great game today. So again, you know, just go back to what you were saying about the strength and depth of the bench. As I said last week, it's, you know, we've almost accidentally found these things out. You know, we've spent so long trying to find a left-back, because we desperately need one to replace Stevie Hamill. And then accidentally, almost, we put Grimshaw at right back. That works, and that allows us to play Tate at left back. And again, we've spent the whole summer adopting this 12 to 18 transfer policy in a bid to strengthen the bench. That fails. And then, just as you said, you know, without doing any real business in January, just by bringing through a couple of young players and finding a settled 11, we find ourselves with the strongest bench that we've had in seasons. So, you know, it's a great position to be in, and it just kind of shows you how quickly things can turn around and how you know, maybe there are answers and solutions there if you stop being so stubborn. Then you start to kind of try things out or give young players a chance. You know, it can work for you. And we're now in this great situation where we've got a settled 11. Things are going well, and we do have a strong, strong bench.
On a much more sombre note in today's game, the Muddle supporters paid tribute to two of their own who sadly passed in the last week, Lloyd Welsh and Craig Frame. A really fitting tribute in the form of banners and a minute's applause at two certain points of the game. Jay, it's a difficult one to discuss. I don't think any of us knew either guy personally, but clearly big losses to the Muddle community. We're unfortunately having to discuss stories like this much more often. It's a very difficult one, and it's a subject possibly not fitting for a football podcast. But great to see the support rally round both guys' friends and families and pay their tribute in a very nice way.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the both kind of tributes today, I thought were sensational. You know, the entire stadium doing the horns clap was just, it was incredible to actually be a part of. You know, it's obviously one thing, you know, you get used to, you know, that end section, you know, doing it, or maybe, you know, the kind of one at Hampden at the end of, you know, the cup final. But to actually see the whole of Firth Park, or at least the home end, kind of united and paying tribute to both guys, it was fantastic, and I don't think you could have, you know, got a better tribute.
Yeah, absolutely, great stuff. Next up for Muddle is Celtic. Wait, last time I actually did a bit for the programme this week. Last time we won six games in a row. The sixth game was against Hearts. We then weren't able to make it seven because we lost at Celtic Park. Let's hope history doesn't repeat itself next week, but a massive challenge, Joe, of that, there is absolutely no doubt. Celtic, perhaps a bit below par today in their win over Kilmarnock, but they did the job and looked very close to making that eight titles in a row, perhaps a double treble as well. But they'll have attentions on European matters this week. Hopefully that will provide some sort of a distraction for them. We can go there, as Jay said earlier on, with a certain degree of confidence. You can't get too carried away, of course you can't, but a difficult game, but one that we'll possibly relish, and given our forum, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at a game like Celtic with nothing to lose. We're kind of in a position where we're 2 points off the top six, and if you'd have said that to me, kind of 10-5 walking out of the Ross County game, I'd have laughed at you. So again, you probably look at it that we're not accounting for the points. So, but we might as well go try and have a go. Celtic are kind of similar to ourselves in the fact that they've come back in their domestic form anyway. Come back from a January break with a couple of new signings and a bit of freshness. Obviously, their new signings were just guys from within, but they've kind of got a bit of a new look with like the likes of Wea and Burke and Toljan, the right back from Dortmund, adding a bit of freshness into their team. The only thing I can, as I say, can hope for really is that they go over to Valencia on Thursday night and come back fatigued from what will definitely be a hard game for them there. We can go there, and I just really hope that we obviously went to Celtic Park in December and played almost a reserve team, which at the time I was a bit torn on, because you then turn around and say that we're playing Kilmarnock, St Mirren and Aki's just after it, and those were the games to have the players fresh for, but then we obviously didn't do well against Kilmarnock and St Mirren. I think it's one of those ones that you go there on Sunday. And as long as it's not a massive defeat that kind of would crush morale, then you'll be happy enough to say that the points aren't what we're accounting for. And again, as I say, we're not going to, as much as we would all love it, we're not going to win forever and ever.
I don't know. I debate that, actually, to be honest. I think we could potentially win forever.
Well, it would be nice after all this time. It's just a shame we're out the Scottish Cup if we're going to win forever. That's a downside. That'll need to wait till next week. But yeah, don't go there particularly fancying us. But at the same time, in the form and confidence we have, was there to be an upset, could conceivably see that potentially happening. So next week, I'm not accounting for the points, but just as long as it's not too much of a blip and we can get back on it the following week.
Yeah, that's it, Jay. And now we look at the league table and see we're 2 points behind St Johnston. We debated the other week whether we were in a race for the top six. I think when the margin goes to 2 points with 7 games remaining, that pretty much confirms you are in a race for the top six.
Oh, aye, absolutely. As I said last week, I think if you, without putting any pressure on the players, I think if you went and asked the likes of Hasty and Turnbull and Campbell if, they had their sights in the top six, they would say absolutely. There'd be no point in, looking to keep this run going and looking to attack teams and get the 3 points if you weren't starting to, look up the table. I think it's only natural to do that. I think St Johnston will be fully aware that we're now breathing down their necks. I think Joe's got it spot on in terms of the Celtic game. It's an incredibly difficult place to go. That game, the last game at Celtic Park was, we obviously debated that at length as well about the merits of dropping so many players and stuff. But if there's one thing that we're guaranteed this time around is it's going to be, an entirely different team, an entirely different, mindset, an entirely different approach to the game. So that's something to obviously be very, very positive about. And I would say that, any team going to Celtic Park is going to find it massively, massively difficult. But if there is one side in the top flight at this very moment in time who is playing, who's on the form to go to somewhere like Celtic Park and get the win, it's us. If any team is going to beat Celtic at the moment, it's probably us based on current form. So, why not have that in mind? Go to Celtic Park and, Sunday, have a go and see where it takes you. Because we have the players, as I said earlier, we now have players who can hurt Celtic, and depending on what happens with them on Thursday night, they could be hurting, they could be, as Joe says, fatigued, and there is an opportunity there to go and get a win. It's obviously nothing to be expecting. There's no pressure on us whatsoever, but go and have a go and see what happens. And even if you get a point, we are now in a situation where the top six is very much achievable, and going to Celtic Park shouldn't really daunt us. It's not a daunting experience. Guys like Hasty and Turnbull, I imagine, will absolutely, lap it up, the opportunity to go there and actually try and play a bit of football. And it'll be interesting to see how Celtic, take us, because, they'll be used to us being that big physical side and knowing that if they just get the ball down, they can, run rings around us. If we go there and actually play a completely different style of football, I'm not suggesting that we'll surprise them. I'm sure that, as I said earlier, everybody's kind of taking notice of us now. So I'm sure Brendan Rodgers will have his team well drilled, that we'll go there and try and play. But I think we could maybe catch them out a little bit still. They won't really, they'll still probably be thinking that, we're this particularly weak side. It wasn't that long ago that we turned up and got turned over. So if we could turn up there and really have a go at them for the first whistle, then, I see no reason why we can't at least get a point. And if you start to, if you manage to avoid defeat on Sunday, then, you really, really start to look at that top six as, very much achievable.
Joe, well, no, Stephen Robinson achieved great things in with making 2 cup finals. Would making the top six, given a start to the season, be an even bigger achievement than that?
It's a difficult one. I always look at those situations and say, I remember years ago that Celtic won the league. I think it was Neil Lennon's first or second season as manager. And the big thing he was credited with was winning the league after going 15 points behind. Excuse me. The thing for me about that was that he was the man that got them 15 points behind. Looking at it in isolation, if we were to get the top six this season, and then we've obviously been out of the quarterfinals of the League Cup and out of the Scottish Cup at the first time of asking. I would probably say that last season, finishing a very comfortable seventh and having two cup finals probably nudges top six if you look at it in isolation. But then if you do go down the route that we were despairing against the likes of games against St Mirren and Kilmarnock, just around the turn of the year, that we were absolutely terrible and got nothing from. It's been some turnaround, and I have to admit it, I was getting to the point after the game in Boxing Day, and maybe there was even the flirtation with it after the Ross County Cup game, that I thought Robinson's time could have been up. But in massive credit to him, he's turned it around, and his time's anything but up, it seems. We've gone on a roll since then. It is a massive achievement for me if we do get top six. But I still think that if you offered me next season, you could have sixth or you could have seventh with a couple of cup finals. I think you take the couple of cup finals into account there. But no, as I say, he's turned it around massively. And for me, it'll be interesting to see what happens next season now. Well, obviously, we kind of thought that our season was over after the Ross County game. We thought we were too big a cushion to go down, too far away from the top six, but we've put ourselves right back into the reckoning for that. And I mean, yesterday you would probably think that you would expect Rangers to beat St Johnston. So you're then looking at, we could have conceivably have been 1 point off the top six. It's great that we've still got something to play for next season. For me, what happens with summer recruitment will be a big factor in how we do next season. It's not going to be easy for the manager, especially. Hopefully we get Hasty tied up, but there'll be guys that move on. And as you know, that it's not easy in our budget to get guys that slot straight into the team. So summer recruitment will have a big play in how we do next season. But for me, I would be absolutely thrilled and delighted if we were to finish in the top six. And top six wasn't my expectation at the start of the season. But in terms of, is it the best thing he's achieved with us? I would still say that you have to take into consideration the poor parts earlier in the season in regards to that.
Pretty pleased at that question there. I asked the difficult questions, Joe, and you did a good job answering that. Well done.
Thanks.
Jay, contracts have been an issue and something that we've discussed in many a podcast since the turn of the year. David Turnbull has signed a new deal with ourselves, and James Scott has become the latest to put pen to paper now. Scott, a player that we've only seen fleeting glimpses of in the first team, certainly impressed in the games I saw in the Ironbrew Cup. We've got to hope that he can continue that progression. He obviously has had a few tastes in recent weeks from the bench. It's certainly a good thing, and good to see another player that has come through the academy getting his chance in the first team and now also having a future at Fir Park.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I think these kind of things, you know, it's almost a cycle you get into in terms of producing young players, because, you know, guys like James Scott can now see that there is very much a pathway into the team. There's guys that he's played with, you know, up through the youth levels now in the first team, getting their opportunity and taking it. And, you know, that starts to be a cycle that, you know, hopefully Jim Scott will then, you know, get more game time, will finally get his opportunity to start games, will hopefully take that opportunity, by which time you should have, you know, maybe Adam Livingston or whoever else then on your bench, then ready to come next. So that's the kind of thing I think we've been lacking in recent years. You know, we can obviously hark back to the days we were bringing through Hamill and Lasley and Clarkson and Faddy and Pearson. And then since then, we have had, you know, the Jamie Murphys and the Mark Reynolds that have come through. But I think in terms of having that really good cycle where you know, the conveyor belt of young players coming through, it does kind of feel as though we're starting to, you know, starting to see that again. And that's really, really important, because it's not just about, you know, bringing a young player through and making sure that, you know, they've got the mentality and the quality to go into the first team. They need to be watching the young players ahead of them make that impact. They need to know that it's achievable. They need to be inspired by it. And I think in certain circumstances, it works in terms of giving them deals and stuff like that, because I think we would all agree that there is, it might not be the, you know, the game changer or the deal clincher, but I think guys like Hasty and Turnbull will have considered the fact that not only are they signing, you know, extended contracts at a club that they're getting first team football and that they've came through the ranks at, but they're getting to now play with the mates that they've been playing with for, you know, all through the youth levels. And I think that's a big, big part as well, because it's, you know, guys that they want to go in the park and enjoy their football with. So it's all, you know, it's a big cycle. Once you get into that routine of producing these young players, obviously there's still huge work to be done. You still need a good bit of luck. But it does become a conveyor belt of talent. And yeah, it's great that James Scott has signed on. He's starting to get, you know, appearances for the bench. It's obvious now, I think, that he is kind of earmarked as perhaps the, you know, next in line behind Curtis Main, particularly now that we're playing a lone striker. Connor Salmon's obviously pretty much vanished off the face of the earth. It's not a role I think Danny Johnson can do. Ryan Bowman's moved on. So, you know, James Scott essentially is our second striker now. You've obviously, so by next season, do we start to see James Scott starting to make that jersey his own, by which point Barry Maguire's came back for Queen of the South. You know, is he going to start getting game time? Adam Livingston, as I mentioned earlier, and, you know, some of the other youth prospects that are coming up through the ranks. So again, it's something to be positive about. It's something to be excited about. I know that there's obviously a review at Fir Park at the moment about how we kind of channel or you know, put our resources into making sure that the pathway from the youth ranks into the first team is as clear as it can be. So I think it's something to be really positive about, because, you know, everybody goes on about that, you know, the class of, you know, the class of 02 and things like that. And, you know, it's great to hark back to those days, but I think that when you are able to talk about it in that isolated way, it doesn't say much for your youth system over a long period of time, because you want to be having class, you know, class of 02, class of 03, class of 04. And I think that's something that hopefully, if we, you know, latch on to this, what's happening at the moment. Yes, we've got a wee bit lucky with producing some of the best young players we have in many, many years at the one time. But if we can make it work for us and if we can, you know, get that pathway at its optimum level, then this could be the start of a really promising conveyor belt where, you know, yes, these players will move on at some point, but when they do, you've already got the next guys coming through.
Has it been a bit of a surprise to you, Joe, that James Scott hasn't had a loan spell as yet? I look at Barry Maguire doing well. He certainly looked like he performed well despite Queen of the South going down 4-1 to Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup last week. And the reports on Barry Maguire are very positive in his time. Jake Hasty, we've waxed lyrically about how brilliant he's been since he's came back from Alloa. James Scott, I would have quite liked to see him getting a run of game time ahead of getting game time in the first team. I think there's no substitute for competitive football. It's all well and good playing reserve games every week, but there's no substitute, is there, for first team competitive football and playing against men as well?
To be honest, I think perhaps the reason for that is what Jay touched on with the fact that he is actually now our deputy number nine, if you like. I think James Scott's younger than, I think he's 2 years younger than Maguire and Campbell and a year younger than Turnbull and Hasty. So I think it might actually be a case that James Scott's loan spell might still be to come. I would, if he's there and he's ready to get into the first team and play games as of next season, then that's something I would love to see. But I wouldn't put it beyond the realms of possibility that we maybe sign a striker in the summer, and that means that James Scott goes away for the first 6 months of next season on loan somewhere, and then comes back ready to go. I think the downside to modern day football, where they're kind of where the strike partnership is dead, if you like, is that there's only going to be one striker of his ilk playing in a team at a time, especially with our current system. So I think that James Scott's loan spell might still be to come, but it's very encouraging that the club will obviously think he's a massive talent if it's a 3.5 year deal they've given him, that he's here to 2022. I watched him in the Colts game against Ross County earlier in the season in the Ironbrew Cup, and I thought he handled himself very well there. And that was obviously a day where he was playing against men, and he looked fearless and he looked physically on it. It looks like he's like a quite a unit of a guy for only being 18 years old. And I do certainly think that there is talent there that we could see developing in the hopefully the near future. But as Jay was saying, it's great to see it all kind of piecing together. The first time we've really had this sort of succession of young players since the days of McFadden, Lasley, Pearson, etc. that Jay was speaking about.
The one negative, I guess, is the news, Jay, that Stuart McKinstry will be moving on come the end of the season. A deal has been done to take him to Leeds United. A fee of around £150,000 reported in the newspapers over the last couple of days. This is for a 16-year-old boy who, you would have to imagine, would still be a couple of years away from challenging for our first team, albeit he's been on the bench. I think on one occasion, I think the game against Kilmarnock around Christmas time, always disappointing to lose a young player that has been touted as a big thing and a player that really will be one to watch in the future. But by the same token, you can imagine going down to Leeds United and the vast resources they have at their wealth, your head is going to be turned. And it is a fantastic opportunity for young Stuart, and all the very best to him.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's less surprising, I think, when a young player, although it doesn't happen as much, it maybe just isn't publicised as much, but when a young player, you know, 16 years old, leaves a club like Motherwell to go to a club like Leeds, I think it's less surprising because, you know, at that stage in the career, he's maybe not quite yet thinking about, you know, first team football. We all talk about guys like Hasty, for example. Obviously, that's the one at the moment because he's out of contract in the summer and we're obviously trying to get him to sign a new deal. And the argument is always that his career would be better served at Motherwell at the moment because he's getting first team football. When a player's, you know, 16 years old, it's perhaps still a couple of years before they're really starting to take into consideration where they're going to get that first team football. So when the opportunity comes along to go to a massive club like Leeds with the resources they'll have in terms of youth development, you know, it's a phenomenal opportunity. He can go in, you know, whether it's the next 2 or 3 years of his development before he starts to look at first team football, he can go and get that with resources and kind of quality coaches. Not to say that we don't have quality coaches at Firth Park, but it will be a step above at Leeds. And no doubt he sees that as an opportunity to really help him realise potential that perhaps he might not have got at Firth Park. So it's certainly not, you know, a move that I think anybody can have any issues with. I think it's a big, big opportunity for him. And as I said, I think if it would be slightly different if it was maybe 2 years on and he'd broke into the first team at Motherwell, it could be looked at as a little bit of a step back to go into a side where you're no longer playing first team football. But that's not really the issue at the moment. The issue at the moment will be those last couple of years of development. And if he feels that it's better served at Leeds United, then, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity and I'm sure we wish him all the best.
Yeah, it'd be very difficult, I think, for the club to stand in the way of an opportunity like that. Of course, Stuart and his family are all big Motherwell supporters, but I don't think that's always a kind of deal-breaker in these things. He's got to look at his career. It's a real opportunity to obviously go down south as well and do a bit of growing up, make a bit of money. So, yeah, exactly as you said, fair play to him. Good luck to him. And let's see how this progresses, I think. By the same token, it's likely that he'll be in their under-18 team or their under-23s team. So he'll perhaps, in a couple of years, be looking for a loan move, perhaps to even back to ourselves for a year to do a bit of learning, to get his chance. A team like Leeds United, a massive, massive football club, and it's so strange still seeing them outside of the top flight in England. So, yeah, we could see Stuart back at Firth Park, I guess, further down the line. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, but all the very best to him anyway.
Yeah, guys, I mean, what's going on? It's all cutting off here. I was just going to say, in terms of, you know, obviously we know his parents, and they are, you know, top folk and massive, massive Motherwell fans. But when you say there about how, you know, that doesn't necessarily play a part. I mean, let's look at it this way. When we've lost guys like Paul Slane, Stephen Pearson to Celtic, one of the kind of the criticisms of that was that, you know, it was the family, the Celtic Daft family had kind of turned their heads and, you know, convinced them to go to Celtic. So I think, you know, it would be almost, hypocritical if we were to expect, you know, a player to remain at Motherwell just because he and or his entire family were Motherwell fans. You know, at the end of the day, they need to weigh up the opportunity that's been presented to him. And if they think that it's the best for his development, not just as a footballer as well, you've got to consider the fact that as a 16-year-old, he's got the opportunity to go and live down south, and that could be the making of him as a person, as a human being. So it's not just a great opportunity to improve and develop as a footballer, it's also the opportunity to kind of grow as a person. And, you know, obviously knowing his parents as we do, we know that they'll obviously have taken that on board, and it's clear that, you know, it will be the best decision, or they believe it's the best decision.
Yeah, that's it. I wasn't suggesting by any means that this is a move that they would have rushed into. I know from speaking to both his parents that it's something that he certainly didn't dive head first into, but the opportunity was too big, and it's one he's now taken, and we'll see how it goes for him. Guys, I was trying to say before Jay rudely interrupted me that I think that was all we had, but Jay had some more.
I'm done now.
Thank you very much for your time today. As I say, it's going to become increasingly difficult to talk about things if we continue to win. So let's hope that Jake Hastie does drag out his contract negotiations a few weeks longer, and then we'll still be able to do this podcast every week.
You're hoping.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Funny dream, and you were wearing funny shoes. You were going to a dance. You were dressed like a punk, but you were too young to remember. I'm happy for you, but now I know this hurt is poison, too sharp to be bland. I'm sitting on my empty bed. I'm on my empty bed. I'd rather listen to Thin Lizzy-o than watch the Sunday Gang in Harajuku. There's something wrong with me, I'm a cuckoo. In every moment I was high from playing shows. We lost a singer to her clothes. My trouble raised its ugly head. I was revealed and I was home in bed. I was a kid again. Jesus told me go after every coin like it was the last in the world, and protect the wayward child. But I'm a little lost sheep, I need my bogey. No, I need my shepherd here tonight. Breaking off this misery, I see a wilderness for you and me. Punctuated by philosophy, I'm wondering how things could have been. Really, I should stay away and let you settle down. I've got no claims to your crown. I was the boss of you, and I loved you. You know I loved you. It's all over now. And I was there for you when you were lonely. I was there when you were bad. I was there when you were sad. Now it's the time I need. I'm thinking do I have to be to get you by my side. I'd rather be Sawtooth and Lazio, and watch the Sunday gang in Harrah Juku. There's something wrong with me, I'm a cuckoo.